All right, let's dive in. Today, we're going to unpack a pretty significant legal battle, one with big implications for how we apply civil rights laws, especially when the rules change kind of mid-game, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And this one, well, it really gets to the heart of some pretty fundamental legal principles.
You sent us some materials on the Rivers v. Roadway Express Supreme Court case from 1994. Sounds pretty straightforward, right? A trucking company, some mechanics. But it goes way deeper than that. This case is all about retroactivity, whether a law passed in 1991 can be applied to events that happened years earlier.
Absolutely. And, you know, as a law student, grasping how laws work with ongoing cases, it's huge. So this deep dive, it'll give you a solid understanding of a foundational case in statutory interpretation and how it still impacts things today.
Cool. So let's break this down, you know, the facts, the legal back and forth, and the core principles that came out of it.
Yeah. And you know what's really interesting about this case? It's not just about this one specific situation. It highlights this kind of fundamental tension between how courts interpret laws and how Congress tries to shape them.
Right. So it's a bit of a tug of war, huh?
Exactly. And the big takeaway right off the bat is this. Rivers established this strong presumption against making statutes retroactive, especially those that create new liabilities, unless Congress makes it super clear that's what they intended. That principle, it's still a cornerstone of how we interpret statutes today.
Okay, I'm starting to see why this case is a big deal. So let's get into the specifics. We're talking about Rivers and Davison, two black mechanics who work for Roadway Express, right? Back in 1986, they had these disciplinary hearings but didn't show up, arguing it violated their union contract's notice rules.
And to keep the timeline going, they were suspended, got back pay, and then again refused to go to another hearing. Same reason. That's when Roadway Express fired them.
Okay, got it. So they got fired, and what happens next?
Well, they sued, claiming racial discrimination under 42 U.S.C. Section 1981.
Ah, that's the big one. So what were they saying?
They were essentially arguing that the termination was because of their race and their insistence on the same procedural protections that white employees got. They said the reasons given for firing them were just a cover-up.
A pretext, right. Like, we're not firing you for that, we're firing you for this other thing, but the real reason is discrimination.
Exactly. But as their case went through the courts, the legal landscape shifted, and I mean significantly.
Oh, this is where it gets tricky, I bet.
Yeah, in 1989, the Supreme Court handed down its decision in Patterson v. McLean Credit Union. And that ruling, it really narrowed how everyone understood Section 1981.
Okay, remind me, Section 1981, what's that all about?
It's a key part of our civil rights laws.
Mm-hmm.
It basically says that everyone has the same right to make and enforce contracts, regardless of race. So, like, employment contracts fall under that.
Right. So before Patterson, how was Section 1981 usually understood?
Well, it was pretty widely accepted that it covered discrimination in all parts of the contractual relationship, including things that happened after you were hired.
But Patterson changed that.
Yeah, Patterson drew a line. It said Section 1981 only covers discrimination when the contract is first made, like when you're hired.
Mm.
After that, it didn't apply as much.
No, I see where this is going.
Right. So the district court, looking at Rivers and Davison's claim, after Patterson, they basically said, nope. Your claim about discriminatory firing that happened after the initial hiring contract doesn't fit under this new, narrower interpretation of Section 1981. And that part of their case, it got tossed out.
Wow, that's a huge blow to their case.
It was. But hold on, because the story doesn't end there. Congress stepped in.
Oh, this is getting interesting. What did Congress do?
Congress wasn't happy with the Patterson decision. They thought it seriously weakened protections against racial discrimination. So in 1991, they passed the Civil Rights Act. And here's the key part. Section 101 of that act, it specifically amended Section 1981 to include discrimination in the making, performance, modification, and termination of contracts. Basically, they were overturning Patterson through legislation.
So they were like, Supreme Court, you got this wrong. We're putting it back to how it was.
Yeah, pretty much. They were restoring what they saw as the true scope of the law.
Makes sense. So now we have Rivers and Davison, their appeal's still going on, and they see this new 1991 act. They're probably thinking, this is it. This brings our termination claim back.
Hmm.
But here's the big question. Did this 1991 act, especially that broadened definition of Section 1981, apply to cases already in the courts when the act passed? That's the retroactivity issue at the heart of Rivers.
You got it. The big legal question in front of the Supreme Court in Rivers was whether this expanded Section 1981, because of the 1991 Act, could go back in time, so to speak, and apply to their case. Remember, their case was based on stuff that happened back in 1986 and was already being appealed when the 1991 Act became law.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So how did the court tackle this retroactivity question? What were the legal principles or framework they used?
They started by pointing out a really important presumption in our legal system. Statutes are generally presumed to apply prospectively, meaning they govern actions that happen after the law is enacted, unless Congress very clearly says it should work retroactively.
Okay, so the default is new law, new cases.
Right. And with Section 101 of the 1991 Act, the court said there was no such clear statement from Congress about applying it retroactively.
Okay, so no clear signal from Congress about going backwards. But wasn't there an argument that the 1991 Act was meant to restore the law to how it was understood before Patterson? Wouldn't that inherently mean some level of retroactivity?
That was a major argument, yeah. But the court ultimately didn't buy it.
Hmm.
Interesting. Why not?
They reasoned that even if Congress wanted to fix what they saw as a bad interpretation in Patterson and go back to the pre-Patterson understanding, that doesn't automatically mean they wanted the new law to apply to past actions. The court made a crucial distinction. A judicial interpretation of a law is considered an authoritative statement of what that law meant all along, even before the court ruled. So Patterson, in their eyes, wasn't wrong. It was a valid interpretation at that time.
Oh, so they're saying the Supreme Court doesn't make mistakes, just interpretations based on what the law was then.
That's the idea. So for Congress to change that interpretation later and have it apply to past actions, the court said they needed to be way more explicit to leave no doubt.
Got it. No reading between the lines. That really clarifies how the court was thinking. So they didn't think the restoration argument was enough for retroactivity without Congress specifically saying so. Did the court consider anything else in their analysis? Yeah, they looked at a few other important things. First, they considered whether Section 101 created new substantive liabilities, meaning did it make employers legally responsible for actions that weren't covered before? Their answer was yes. By expanding Section 1981 to include termination, it exposed employers to new potential lawsuits for things that, under Patterson, wouldn't have been a problem. And the court is usually really careful about retroactively applying laws that create new liabilities. You know, you can't really hold someone accountable for something that wasn't considered wrong when they did it.
Fairness, right? Like, it's got to be a level playing field.
Exactly. And they did touch on fairness, but they basically said there was no inherent unfairness in using the Patterson standard for events that happened before the 1991 Act. Because at the time Roadway Express fired Rivers and Davison, Patterson was the law of the land, so to speak. Applying it to their case wouldn't be like pulling the rug out from under anyone.
Okay, so the court was like, look, everyone was playing by the Patterson rules back then, so it's fair to judge those actions by those rules?
Right. So ultimately, the Supreme Court ruled against Rivers and Davison on the retroactivity issue in a 7-2 decision.
Wow, 7-2, that's pretty decisive. But there was a dissenting opinion, right? What were the main points of the dissent?
You bet. Justice Blackmun, in his dissent, argued pretty strongly that Section 101 should apply retroactively, at least to cases that were still in process when the 1991 Act passed and where it wouldn't step on established rights. His core point was that back in 1986, when the alleged discrimination happened, the common understanding of Section 1981 was that it did cover discriminatory firing. So applying Section 101 retroactively, in his view, wouldn't be some surprise or unfair burden on employers. It would be setting the legal landscape back to what people thought it was at the time. He felt the majority was being too strict about this presumption against retroactivity, and that it was blocking the application of this important civil rights law.
That's a really interesting point. Sounds like he was saying, come on, everyone knew what the law was supposed to be. Let's just apply it that way.
Yeah, he was emphasizing the spirit of the law, the intended remedy for discrimination, over the strict letter of the law as it stood after Patterson.
So we see this clash between two judicial philosophies. The majority focused on a tight reading of the law and clear congressional intent, while the dissent focused on what they saw as the purpose of the law and fairness.
Yeah, it's a classic debate in legal interpretation.
So even though Rivers and Davison didn't win their Section 1981 claim because of this retroactivity ruling, this case is still super important, right? Why does this 1994 decision still matter so much in legal analysis today?
It's important for a bunch of reasons. First, Rivers, together with Landgraf USI Film Products, a case decided the very same day. By the way, they laid down the foundation for how we look at statutory retroactivity even now.
Mm-hmm.
These two cases gave us the main framework courts still use to decide whether a new statute applies to things that happened before it was passed.
Okay, so a landmark decision setting a precedent. What else makes Rivers stand out?
It also really reinforces the idea that if Congress wants a law to work retroactively, they got to be super clear about it. It's like a message to Congress. Just aiming to fix what you see as a bad court interpretation isn't enough. You got to spell out that retroactive intent in the law itself or its legislative history. That has definitely shaped how Congress writes laws ever since.
That makes sense. Anything else?
Yeah, one more key takeaway. Rivers highlights this ongoing push and pull between the legislature's power to respond to Supreme Court decisions and the judiciary's commitment to procedural fairness and that presumption against retroactivity. It's this balancing act that's built into our system. And this case is a prime example of that in action.
It's like they're constantly checking each other. So what does all of this mean for our listeners, the future legal eagles out there?
Well, Rivers, alongside Landgraf, really gives you the bedrock for analyzing how laws apply over time. You've now got a framework to use when you encounter a new statute. Does this law create new duties or liabilities? Did Congress explicitly say they want it to apply to past conduct? Would using it retroactively be unfair to those who acted based on the old law? These are the kinds of questions you'll face a lot in your legal careers.
And don't forget the different views shown in the majority and dissenting opinions, right?
Absolutely. They highlight how judges can approach interpreting laws. Some stick closely to the text, others consider broader ideas of fairness and what lawmakers intended. It's a reminder that legal analysis often means weighing different values and perspectives.
For sure. And this brings up a crucial question for all you legal minds out there. In our legal world, which is always changing with new laws and court decisions, how should courts balance the need for clear, predictable rules with the desire to apply updated laws to ongoing cases, especially in such important areas as civil rights? It's a tricky balancing act with real consequences, and Rivers v. Roadway Express, it remains a key case for understanding this dynamic.
Couldn't have said it better myself. It's definitely food for thought for anyone entering the legal profession.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time.
See you then.